Welcome to the Father's Day. I'm Jesse Lee Peterson. Thank you all for being with me. I absolutely appreciate it. And remember, you can support the Father's Day by going to Locals in the descriptions there. Also, on the fatherstate.tv/donate. And I do appreciate it. I have with me Dr. Michael and Barbara Grossman. And they are a married couple who have been together for more than 50 years. That's a long time. 50 years. They joined us today to discuss their brand new book, Ageless Love, The Sexy Science of Falling in Love Forever. Amazing. So welcome to the show.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
So you've been in love with her for 50 years?
More than 50 years, correct.
Really? And we're going to get into the book and how it all came about. But what does that feel like to be in love with the same person for more than 50 years? What does that feel like?
She's totally different than she was.
When you first met her?
Yeah.
And what's the difference? What was she like when you first met her and now?
When I first met her, she was very cooperative. She did whatever I wanted. And we had 10 years of a lovely marriage.
Right. 10 years.
And then she went back to graduate school, got her degree, and she changed.
All hell broke loose.
Well, she started having her own ideas of how things should be.
Wow.
And she wasn't so cooperative.
Really? And so why did you send her back when she started acting that way? Why did you send her back home to her parents?
We had two kids.
Oh.
And if it wasn't for that, I would have left.
Amazing. Did you know that before today?
I don't believe him.
You don't believe him?
No, I think...
Speak a little louder for me.
Our motivation to work on things definitely came from having two children.
Right.
And maybe we wouldn't have been as determined to find solutions to our differences. But so children are a great motivator.
Yeah, that's for sure.
And so it might be true.
But didn't you change after 10 years, you became a different person?
Well, yeah, I think when couples get together, they accentuate their affinities. And so there's, you know, we agreed on a lot of things. And then over time, you realize you're different. And that's when conflicts arise.
Yeah.
And it's a natural evolution. There's nothing wrong. But it can be very complicated and painful for couples because they don't understand it.
Are you surprised he stayed with you after you changed? After 10 years, you changed? Are you surprised? Except for the children, are you surprised he stayed with you?
Gosh, it was a very tense time, and it wasn't a pleasant experience for me either. I come from a family where my mother was divorced when I was very young, and I lived for a while without any dad, and then I had a new father. And I just appreciate a mother and a father together.
Yeah.
It makes a big difference. And for each of our unique reasons, we persevered. And we found mentors who helped us learn and grow. We wouldn't have known how to do it without that.
Do you love him now, 50 years later?
With all my heart.
You do? Mm-hmm. And how do you know you love him?
He touches my soul all the time. He's such a good man. I love his spirit. He's kind and he cares for people, and he's a phenomenal father. And I just feel his love, and we have mutual values.
Amazing.
And so it's just a great life.
And do you obey him?
Well, I don't. I don't look to be an obstacle, but I look to be supportive.
And do you obey him?
In a sense, yes. I don't like the word, but I cooperate because I want him to have what he wants.
You don't like what word?
I don't know that I like the word obey. It's a religious word for sure.
Right.
If I have a strong point of view, we have calm conversations and we sort it out. I don't do anything that I think compromises my soul. But we found a way to work together where it's, you know, to do what Michael wants me to do is really a pleasure and an honor.
Nice. And why don't you obey him?
Because, you know, I'm an American child of the 60s, and so there's a certain spunky thing about me. And I have to check my own point of view and not ignore it.
Amazing. Does she obey you, Michael?
when we have a disagreement, we have processes that we have been practicing for 40 years that allow us to share deeply with each other. And it allows me to see, oh, look how she experiences the world. It's so different than how I experience it.
Yes.
And that's why she thinks that way. And that's why she has these strong opinions. Oh, and it takes it forces me to expand my perspective, and the same for her, to expand her perspective. And then we have to come to agreement.
Yeah.
But it's not quite the obey. But it is listening to each other with an open mind and open heart and expanding our point of view, and then we have to come to an agreement.
Yeah. What a mess. Turn that fan off for me. What a mess. You mentioned that obey is a Christian religious way. Are you guys Christians? Because I think I heard one of you guys are Jewish, right?
We're both Jewish. I have a Christian seminary education. I have a PhD from Claremont School of Theology, and I went to Union Theological Seminary in New York as well.
Oh.
I was a chaplain at St. Joseph Hospital.
Really? Mm-hmm. So you're Christian or Jewish?
I'm Jewish, but I Christianity is, you know, a brother or sister to Judaism. It's very close.
Oh.
And I'm, you know, happy to participate in valuing and respecting Christianity with a deep heart.
Okay. And so are you Jewish or Christian?
Jewish.
You're Jewish. How did you end up with a Christian woman? How did that work in?
We go to a Jewish synagogue. I'm happy to have her enjoy whatever she enjoys with her experience. It doesn't interfere with being Jewish.
Right.
It's not an interference at
all. Nice. I like when I was growing up, it was understood that Judaism and Christianity was like brother and sister one.
Yes.
So I grew up with that all my life.
Yes.
And I'm surprised, to be honest with you, to see that changing with some Christians and Jews. They seem not to understand the relationship between Judaism and Christianity.
Yes.
It's an important spiritual relationship, but it's being distorted now.
Yes.
And that's not good.
Correct.
I don't think it's good. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Do you believe that human beings are in a fallen state?
Yes.
And what does that mean to be in a fallen state?
It means that we're not whole.
Yeah.
We're not, we've got work to do in our lives to improve ourselves, to learn, and to connect with our source.
Yeah. Do you believe that human beings are in a fallen state today?
Yeah, they are. And that's why we have laws and rules.
Yeah.
That you have to obey them, because left to yourself, not going to happen.
I know. What a mess, huh? Let me ask this, and then I have a question about your book. A couple questions. How do you see the world now? When you look around you, your environment in the United States and even around the world, but especially in the United States, how do you see things today as opposed to the way it was when you were growing up?
It's changed quite a bit. When I was growing up, I'm 74, most women were not working.
Yeah.
They were home with the kids.
Yeah.
And if you were working, it was just some part-time stuff, or the kids already were grown.
Yeah, I remember those days.
And mother was always around, and that was the way it was. And if you were playing out in the street, one of the parents was always around.
Yeah.
You were never quite on your own. And you don't have that now.
Yeah.
And when I was a kid, Friday afternoon in public school in New York City, you had services, you read from the Bible, you said prayers, you sang hymns. Whatever religion you were doing that.
Yeah.
And at 1964, it stopped.
Amazing.
And I missed that a lot. That was my favorite time of being in school.
Uh-huh.
And I missed that. And so now, you know, kids don't even... get an opportunity to learn any of that in school.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of things that are different. And women now have changed so much. They are taught to be masculine.
Yeah.
And they're not taught to be nurturing. Everything has to be done a certain way. You're at work, you got to do it, you got to do it. And then you come home, and it's hard to be nurturing. It affects the family life a lot.
Yeah. I would never marry a woman that is not willing to stay home and watch over my children. You agree to that?
That's the best thing.
Yeah.
Now, the other way that I grew up, my mom would go to the family store, and we were all at the store together.
Yeah.
And we're all working together as a team.
Yeah.
So that's a different way. You used to get a lot of that. Now you don't have that.
Do you agree that a man should not marry a woman who's unwilling to stay home and watch over his children?
Oh, that's a complicated question. You know, we're a partnership world now. We don't people in America don't live out of ancient rules. They're making it up on their own. And the philosophy of this era is partnership. And every husband and wife is, you know, making up their own system. And what do I believe? I think husband and wife need to be on the same page. They need to be planning their lives. They need to be, the children are number one after, you know, they need to create a life that works for everyone concerned. I don't know that I would force a certain model on every family. This is not a time in our society where that's going to work. Children are having a hard time.
Right.
Husbands and wives are having a hard time.
And do you agree that a man shouldn't marry a woman that's unwilling to stay home and watch over children?
If she's unwilling, that's a different problem. Why have children if you're going to have other people raise them?
Right. And so should a man marry a woman that's unwilling to stay home and watch over his children?
You know, I think couples have those abstract conversations when they're dating. And then they get married and a couple of years pass. And it doesn't matter what you talked about over dinner when you were dating. People evolve over time. And so, you know, a man can have a woman's word that she's going to stay home with the children, but, you know, move the clock a couple of years and things change. And that's the society we live in.
Right. And should a man marry a woman that's unwilling to stay home and raise his children?
If she says she's unwilling and that's your condition of satisfaction, that you shouldn't marry that woman.
I agree.
And you should have those conversations before you get married.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's very important to have those conversations. So when you're dating, Barbara teaches people when you're dating, I'm stealing your information here. You date three people at once, and when you realize this person is not the right person for me to be dating and I'm not going to marry them, you take them off the dating list, and then you have a new person you put in. And you don't settle for one person until you talk with them and they say, you know, I'd like to get married and I want you to be my partner in life. And then you got to talk about all these things. You say, well, let's think about it. I want this, I want that, I want to stay home with the kids, or I don't want to stay home with kids, or I don't want kids, or I do want... You got to get that all straightened out before you commit. Then when you commit, you're no longer dating. But you don't spend 5 years with someone and then figure out 5 years later, oh, gee, you don't want children. Oh.
Like, what the... That's right.
So the background of that kind of interview is that most people date one person at a time.
Yeah.
They get attached, and they, you know, if they enjoy the attachment, they go on and make serious commitments without really seeing how other people think and without exploring all those questions.
Yeah.
And so it's, you know, they marry emotionally without really interviewing properly.
I tell guys all the time now that when you meet a woman, you go out to lunch or dinner. On that very first date, you ask that woman, are you willing to obey me if we should get married? If she says no, get up and walk away. Leave her at the table and just walk away. That makes sense?
That's a tough word, obey, in this generation.
It's a hard word, but...
It's a true word, though.
It's such an interesting word. what we teach our couples is that you've got to be able to talk with each other and listen to each other. So even if you're going to obey the husband, because he's the head of the household.
He's head of the woman.
You still have to listen to each other.
Yeah.
And that's tricky. So we teach couples how to listen without interrupting and to see, oh, you're really sensitive. Like, for instance, I'm sensitive to criticism.
Are you?
Oh.
Really?
Because I grew up that way with my mother and brother criticizing me and all this stuff. So, but if Barbara criticizes me, that hurts. So I ask to make requests of her. And she's sensitive to abandonment because when she was 3 months old, her natural father left.
Oh.
And so she saw him a few times, but after 2 years, she never saw him again. And so she's afraid of abandonment. So I have to be sensitive to her needs. She has to be sensitive to my needs.
Well, why not overcome it? So it's not even easy.
That's the purpose of marriage, is that you overcome all your sensitivities because that's why I'm attracted to her for the very reason that she can heal me and I can heal her.
And so are you healed now?
I'm much, much, much less sensitive than I used to be.
but not healed.
Well, I would say not 100%, no, but it's, I feel God's presence through my wife because she's so sensitive to my needs.
Oh.
And vice versa. So little by little, when God completely takes over my life, I'll be totally healed.
Amazing.
And so, but it's a process, you know.
Are you healed from your traumas?
A lot, but yeah, a lot.
But not all the way.
You know, I'm pretty satisfied with.
Speak up for me a little bit.
What's that?
Speak a little louder for
you
me.
You know, I've come a long way. You know, I used to be, you know, very reactive, kind of, you know, internally crazy. If I lose, you know, a piece of project I'm working on, I get all upset about that. So loss in any form makes me nutty.
Wow.
So, and you know, I have softened up and calmed down, and I still have a lot, you know, years to live, I hope, and I expect, you know, I feel pretty healed. You know, I'm much lighter in my heart than I was when I was young.
And so you believe in God, right?
Absolutely.
You're a Christian, so you believe in God. How is it possible to believe in God and not be totally healed from all that?
Well, because, you know, I have an eternal soul and I have a finite personality.
Really?
And I get hooked by this and that. So,
amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing.
And so a man and a wife, are they husband and wife or are they partners?
Well, they're husband and wife.
Right, so men and women shouldn't be saying that we are partners. They should be saying we are husband and wife. Because I think the partner thing comes from the gay people. They want to be accepted, so they say we are partners. But I hear a lot of men and husband and wife saying that they're a partner and it doesn't fit. God says you're a husband and wife. He doesn't say you're a partner. Am I right about that?
That's correct.
Yeah.
In our classes, we teach that there's a masculine effect, which we can talk about chokhmah, when we talk about the Kabbalah and the Sephiroth. You have wisdom. It's a masculine thing.
Yeah.
And then you have bina, which is understanding, which is the feminine quality. Everyone has it in two parts of your brain. You have the right side of your brain controls the left side of your body, and the right side of your brain sees the big picture. That's chokmah, it's wisdom, one side of the brain. The other side of the brain sees the little pieces of everything. It's like a supercomputer analyzing little details of things. And that is bina, that's all the little kinds of things you get. And so you have two parts of your brain. You have to learn to balance it. And men and women are different.
That's for sure.
I'm a medical doctor, and we know, that's the research, men and women are different. Women have lots of connections in their brain. And women can feel and think and go back and forth really fast. Men can't because they don't have so many connections.
I know. That's why men have to end the conversation soon. The women go on and on
and on.
Right. The dogs start barking. The fire truck come by.
That's
and they
right.
Go,
That's exactly right. And that's why when we have couples talk and share, we limit the conversation to 5 minutes for each person maximum. Yeah. And then we you can't talk about it anymore the rest of the day. But it's a deep conversation.
Yeah.
And so the men and women have to listen to each other and recognize that, oh, gee, they are so different than me. If you expect your partner to think and act the way you act, that's a big mistake, because it's not going to happen and it's going to be a lot of upsets.
Yeah, that's for sure.
You've got to accept the fact they're so different than you.
Yeah.
And you can't make them wrong for not agreeing with you. So that obey thing is, there are certain, the old joke is that the man has a right to vote for whoever he wants, and that's it. No more discussion about it, and the women can decide everything else.
Yeah, I like that, because the woman doesn't know how to vote anyway. She's going to vote emotionally and vote in the wrong person, and we all pay a price for it.
Yes. Well,
but a woman is able to deal with the emotional realm in a different way than a man.
That's for sure.
And so a man can teach a woman that she can control her life and make it work and be practical and solve problems. And a woman can teach a man to be open and listen to your heart. And you both are teaching each other. So that happens a lot in
good marriages.
In a good marriage.
Amazing. Did you ever forgive your mother? You said your mother left, right? Or your father left? Which one left you?
I think my mother left my... She had her reasons. And
so your mother left your father?
Mm-hmm.
And she left you with your father? Or did you go with her?
She left with me.
Oh, she took you with her?
Yes.
And did you ever forgive her for leaving your father?
Absolutely.
You forgave your mother?
Absolutely.
What was it like for you when she separated you from your father?
I was 2 months old. I didn't understand anything, but I experienced a lack of a father figure. I live with my mother and my grandmother. There was no, masculine figure in the house.
Yeah.
And I had, my mother told me, as bless her heart, she told me she married a man right after World War II. She hadn't dated anybody. The men came back from the war. He was a handsome guy in a World War II uniform. And, he wasn't a grown-up. She called him a bad man because he wasn't responsible.
Your father?
That's what she called him. And
that's too bad.
That is too bad. I went to meet him when I was like 18 years old.
Oh, you did?
I wanted to find out the rest of the story.
Right.
And what I found out was he just wasn't a grown-up.
Oh.
And so, she was hurt by his lack of responsibility. But he didn't intend bad, but he was in his 50s at the time, and he still wasn't grown-up. So I understood my mother's decision, and there was nothing to forgive. It was what she had to do to make a better life. And she found a man who was a mature person, and she remarried, and she had a great life with him.
So she only remarried one time after
that? Yes.
Amazing. And did you like your stepfather?
Yes, I did. He's a wonderful man.
Oh, you did. Do you have anger?
No.
You have no anger?
No.
You never get angry?
Oh, that's not true.
I didn't say so. What?
Well, I'll tell you, I can get angry when I'm frightened. And I used to experience it more pronounced when I fear loss. Like when Michael used to work around the clock and there was here and I would be lonely and sad and all that, and I'd get angry because I hadn't seen him. It's because I was afraid that we were disconnected. I was afraid that he didn't love me anymore. Anger is not a primary feeling. It's a secondary feeling. There's a feeling underneath that. And most people don't know that. They just dramatize their anger.
And so you have anger?
Not in recent time.
But do you have anger?
Of course.
Okay. Do you have anger?
Occasionally.
You do. And what good does it do you to hold on to anger? Why not let it go?
Absolutely. So anger is always created by hurt underneath it. It's always there.
Right.
And so when we share... We share the hurt, Barbara and I. So we have a process that we do when we have some emotional upsets that occur. We share the hurt. And then after we share the hurt a while, naturally what happens is that you're sharing the fear you have, the fear of loss. And that allows us to connect once again with each other.
Oh.
The anger is the last of the emotions. It's very late. And anger is not a great thing to share.
It's not.
No.
But
if you share the hurt, and if you share the fear of loss, that is worthwhile to share, so you can just listen to each other, understand each other, and then you can listen with compassion to each other.
What is it like being with a man that is emotional?
Well, if you mean a man who's integrated his feelings with his thinking?
No, a man that's angry and emotional. Because is it like two women being married together?
I've never been with a man like that, thankfully.
He has anger.
Michael's not an angry guy. If he has...
He just said he was, right, Michael?
It's fair.
I have anger occur, and when it does, I'm going to share the hurt, and then I'm going to share the fears.
So, you know that women hate men that are angry and emotional? They see it as a weakness.
Anger is not a good emotion for anyone to share.
I know.
Man or woman.
Right. You're right. And the reason is because anger is evil. Anyone that has anger is evil. And there's no love in it at all. And it's all about the individual. It's never about the other person. It's a very selfish, evil thing to have.
Well, I wouldn't use that terminology, but it is an emotion that's not effective.
Yeah.
It's an emotion that is not helpful. And when you really are listening to each other, the anger will quickly settle down into the hurt. And that's what you want to share about, is the hurt.
So why not overcome it? It's a spirit. Why not overcome it so it's not even in your body or mind? It's not in your spirit at all if you overcome, because it's an evil spirit.
Can I answer that?
Yes.
Because if you have a rule, no anger, that means, for anger is just a invitation to look deeper. Anger alerts you that something is not right. And if you suppress your anger, that's not good either.
Well, you don't want to suppress it. You want it to be taken away from you.
But you,
so that it's not in you, period. Since it's a spirit.
But you have to acknowledge it first and then take
right.
it apart. And you don't want to dramatize it and make it a negative factor in your relationship. But you do need to process, you know, your anger so that you get to really what's going on. Most people don't have the patience to do that, and they dramatize their anger, and that's terrible. It's just what I think you're talking about.
Yeah. Do you expect to have anger the rest of your life?
No.
You expect at some point to overcome it?
You know, I'm rarely angry.
I'm sorry?
And at this point in life, I'm rarely angry, though I should ask you to make sure I'm telling you the truth. But I'm not, you know, I
Michael's thinking, yeah, that was you thing.
You know, I get disappointed. I feel hurt. I think for the most part, I know how to express myself because I sit with it and figure out what's going on. I take responsibility for that feeling. And, you know, when I was a young mother, yeah, I would get reactive when my children didn't listen to me. It's all a learning process.
Have you apologized to your children for destroying them in that way?
If I haven't, I should.
Have you?
I think I apologized to at least one of my daughters.
Yeah, because you have recreated them in your image. And so they're not themselves, they're you. Because you become like what you hate, right? Anger is hatred. As evil. And when mothers impose their will on their children like that, they turn them away from their fathers, they recreate the children in their image, and so they grow up not being themselves. They start to think and act like their mothers instead of themselves. But if you forgive, if you apologize, hey, I'm wrong, I turned you away from your father, I recreated you in my image, and I'm sorry. I've done to you what my mother done to me. Why haven't you told them that?
Well, I have promoted their dad, and my girls have a fabulous relationship with their dad.
But why haven't you told them that, though?
I don't know. Maybe I'm not sure. I'm happy to do that in the next 24 hours.
Nice.
Because I want good for them, and they're doing well in their lives.
And have you apologized to them for not protecting them from their mother? Just as your father didn't protect you from your mother. And so you repeated what your father had done. Have you apologized to your girls? You have girls, boys or just girls?
Two girls.
No boys?
Seven grandchildren.
You made a boy first or a girl first?
We have two girls.
Really? Real men make boys first. Did you know that? Nice. But have you apologized to your girls for not protecting them from their mother?
I don't think I've specifically done that, no.
And why not? Because you notice they're just like their mother. Their attitude, they're angry like that. They're not themselves. Why haven't you apologized to them?
It's an interesting thought process. I'm not aware that they have I think when the kids were misbehaving when they were teenagers, they were not listening to the mom.
Because they hate her.
And we went on a process whereby we stopped the arguments that they were having with their mother, and they had to talk to me about it.
Yeah.
And that settled the whole problem.
But tell them to forgive their mother and forgive you for not protecting them from it.
Yeah.
Because when they were teenagers, you started to see what they really felt about her. They didn't like her. They didn't like her lack of patience, her lack of anything. That makes sense?
I think that makes sense when they were teenagers, yes.
Yeah. Do you believe that you can have perfect peace on earth while you live?
I would love that.
All right. Do you believe it's possible?
I'd like to think it's possible, but I have my doubts.
So you don't believe it's possible?
Human nature is tough.
Yeah, human nature is evil. So do you believe it's possible?
What I believe is possible is that a man and woman can come together and have a holy household and create peace in their home and send their children.
But they can't have it when they have anger.
Well, that's why we have to learn, you know, use our relationship to learn.
So do you believe it's possible to have perfect peace while you live?
Perfect peace? I don't know. I don't know how to answer your question.
Oh, okay. Do you have perfect peace?
You know, depends on what you mean by peace. Because there's my own personal peace, there's my family peace, there's the community peace, there's the national peace. Nationally, we're not at peace.
And do you have perfect peace?
Not perfect, but remarkably sweet. I have a sweet heart and life at this time in life.
And do you have perfect peace?
No, I don't.
Do you have perfect peace, Mark?
No.
You don't. Do you believe it possible to have perfect peace right here on earth and not wait until you die?
I do believe.
And so why don't you have it?
It's a process. I don't have it yet. Am I closer to it now than I was 10 years ago? Yes. Am I closer to it now than I was 20 years ago? Yes.
Do you want it?
Sure.
May I tell you how to get it? You got to forgive your mothers, both of you, for recreating you in their image. And then forgive your fathers for not protecting you from the mothers, because your father ended up marrying a woman that's just like his mother. Mm-hmm. You become attracted to what you hate, and the cycle repeats itself.
Yes.
So if you should forgive your mother and your father, God will forgive you, and he will take away the spirit of anger and give you perfect peace. Christ came that we may have perfect peace. But you got to forgive your mothers, because you just repeated their life just as your children are repeating the same thing. That makes sense?
Well, I would say that I forgive my mother completely.
Did you tell her?
Oh, yeah. And my father.
You told them you forgive them?
Yeah.
You told them that?
Yeah.
You told them that?
Well, I'm thinking.
I told my mom I was grateful to her. And
when did you tell her you forgive her for what she's done to you? Your mother truly did a number on you.
So I had one. I had an issue with my mother for sure.
Yeah.
It's complicated. And I want you to know, I wrote her a letter about it when she lived in New York and we lived in California. And we met them in New York and sat at a restaurant table and talked about it.
But you didn't forgive her.
I believe I forgave her.
Cause did you tell her that?
I told her what had me feel very complicated about her. And how it set my life up in a certain way that was just painful and treacherous. And she understood, and she had a soft response. And I, you know, was grateful, and I thanked her, and I told her I love her with all my heart.
But you didn't
forgive her. I don't know that I used those words exactly.
God said that you got to go and forgive, and he will forgive us.
Yes.
But I do forgive her.
If you didn't go to her and say, you know what, I've been resenting you all my life, because to both your parents, but especially mother, I have been resenting you for all my life for what you've done to me, whatever it was. You imposed your will on me, you whatever, right? And I'm sorry for resenting you. I realize now you can help yourself, and I'm sorry for resenting you. And in that very moment, when you forgive them, God will forgive you. Whether they admit their wrongdoing or not, it's on them. But God will forgive you and give you perfect peace. But you got to admit in your heart that you had that anger. That makes sense?
My mother and father passed away quite some time ago.
Right.
I can't remember the exact conversation, but if they're listening now, in case I haven't told you, I absolutely forgive you, Mom, for all the things that I resented about my childhood and so on. I 100% forgive you for everything, and Dad, anything that I imagined that I held against you, I totally forgive you. Absolutely forgive both of them.
And you got to forgive your mother too, and your father, because your mother was crazy, and your father couldn't help her. She was not a victim. She was a victimizer, and he didn't know how to deal with the hell in her. And she couldn't help herself because her mother did it to her. So you got to forgive them. They couldn't help them. Just as you guys been fighting with each other and doing all this crazy stuff. It's not you, something making you do those things, and it's the spirit of unforgiveness. When you forgive your mother, God will forgive you.
God.
And give you perfect peace while you live.
Absolutely, I love that. And I have forgiven. I've lost both my parents, so I'm grateful for them deeply.
But if you want peace, that's what it takes.
Yes.
Well, let me ask, what is ageless love? The sexist science of falling in love forever. What is sexist science?
So the science of falling in love forever is the most important factor in longevity after the age of 50. It's not cholesterol, it's not your weight, it's not your exercise, it's not smoking.
Yeah.
It's the quality of your personal relationships.
Oh, okay.
That's the science. So if you want to be living healthy and long, you've got to have highest quality relationship of your marriage. It's absolutely critical.
Amazing.
And so that's the science. So once you realize that's the science, then how do we make it happen? So all the things you're talking about, we have our own classes that we teach both online and in person, where we teach people to do just what you're saying, how to forgive everybody in your life, how to forgive your partner, your marriage partner, how to forgive them for
your wife or your husband.
Your wife and your husband. How to forgive them for the hurts, how to ask them to help you to heal your own hurts that you brought with you, and to understand each other. And we have practical ways to do that. So you want to have the most intimate relationship with your husband or wife. That's what God wants. Wants
Absolutely.
That to be your most intimate relationship, not your friends, not your other family members, but your husband and wife.
Absolutely.
And your children have to come second. The husband and wife have to come first. So that's what we teach, and that's the sexy science of falling in love forever. You need to have that quality of relationship. And then we have other chapters. We talk about the physical. As a medical doctor, I teach people how to stay healthy, how to feel vibrant, even though, you know, we're 73, 74, we're ballroom dancers, we compete all over the United States.
Really?
We love doing that. And
you guys still do ballroom dancing now?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
No, ballroom dancing.
Yeah, yeah.
Amazing.
And we compete, yeah.
Really?
And but that's what I do. As a medical doctor, I help people stay young and youthful. So then, in terms of your energy, your brain, your muscle stamina, and your libido, you want to keep that youthfulness ongoing. It should never go away. That's the sexy science of falling in love forever.
Nice. Let me ask you something about doctors. You mentioned you're a medical doctor. I notice, and I hear it all the time, that doctors, they give you prescription pills for things, like blood pressure, cholesterol, whatever the thing is, but they never take you off of it. Why is that?
Depends upon the medicine as to whether you should be taken off it or not. If your blood pressure goes back down because you're eating better, you're exercising, and you're more active, you're losing weight, then you can reduce or eliminate those blood pressure pills.
But the doctor's not going to tell you that.
No. Well, I couldn't say for all doctors, but many doctors will. When your blood pressure goes too low, they lower your blood pressure medicine.
Oh. And the reason I ask that, I know so many people right now that they went to the doctor, and the doctor said, oh, you have cholesterol, or you have blood pressure problem, or whatever. And they get them pills, and they never take them off. And if they run out of pills, they just go right to the drugstore and get a new batch. Or if it's run out, the drugstore call the doctor and say, oh, this person out of pills. Give them. And now they have like that thing where they have to go and get blood cleansed every 3 days because of the pills that destroyed the body, because the doctor never took them off the pill.
What, you're raising very important questions. There's a lot of medications that have many, many side effects. As a medical doctor, I try to give as few prescription medicines as we can.
That's how it used to be in the good old days.
And you've got to work on people's lifestyle, their eating habits, their exercise, the quality of their personal relationships. And you want them to feel good. And then I'm not enthusiastic about a lot of medications to, quote, prevent things when it's not really clear that it's a good idea.
Yeah.
So like statin drugs are a mixed blessing. The most highly prescribed medicine in the United States, they have a lot of side effects. They have some benefits, not because they lower cholesterol so much, but more because they reduce inflammation in the arteries.
Oh.
And you can, there's a lot of other things to reduce inflammation in the arteries besides the statin drugs. Statin drugs make a lot of money, but you can take all kinds of herbs and nutrients and change your diet and reduce the inflammation in your arteries. There are so many things that you can do that are natural. You don't have to take the medicines always. Sometimes you may need to do it, but the point you raise is very important. Anytime you can do things naturally through herbs, through nutrients, through minerals, that's a better way to go.
They don't make doctors like you anymore.
That is true. Unfortunately, doctors aren't taught to think anymore. They follow the textbook rules and regulations, and they don't think. That's true. I am an outlying doctor, and it's true. But it's really sad when I see the young doctors, they don't think.
That's amazing. I'm thinking of some people that's close to me, and the doctor gave them those pills, and now they have to go every 3 days and have the blood. What do you call that? Blood cleanse. When they take the blood out of your body and refresh it and put it back in.
It's a big thing. It's not a little thing to do that.
What is it called? I can't think of the name of it.
Yeah.
Transfusion.
Transfusion.
No, it's not a transfusion.
No, it's not transfusion.
No,
it's some kind of way. But anyway,
yeah.
But that's what happens. If I ever need a doctor, I'm coming looking for you.
You're smart. Michael's an independent thinking doctor. I'm very proud of him.
I can tell that. I love that. And that's how it was when I was growing up.
I do a lot of work with healing injuries without surgery.
Uh-huh.
Stem cells, exosomes, and platelet-rich plasma. Exosomes are growth factors from the umbilical cord of newborn babies. We used to throw out the umbilical cord. Now we save it. and we use it to inject people in different injuries that repair the injuries without surgery 80% of the time.
Really?
Yeah, it's a great thing.
All right, I'm looking for insurance, you if I ever need a doctor.
Insurance won't cover that. So there's so many things that we can do now that aren't available 20, 15 years ago. We treat sexual dysfunction for men and women. That's not psychological, it's physiological. And we use these same growth factors to repair damage that has occurred, and then people can be sexually active again and have the fulfilling intimacy that you need in a marriage.
Really?
Do a lot of that. It's very, very, very effective.
Okay, I'll be over there. So let me ask this. Is sex love?
It's an expression of love, especially, you know, if you're not impulsive, if you're having sex with your spouse, it feels like love. It is love. It's a form of love.
Like love.
Yeah.
Sex feel like love.
It's a form of loving, like hugs. But sex in itself can be very, you know, banal, very, you know, insignificant if you don't treat it as something sacred.
Oh. What is love?
What is love? You ask great questions. Love is when your heart opens to somebody or something else and you feel intimate to that someone or something.
Okay.
And that can happen easily through sexual activity if you're loving them. But sex can just be a mechanical thing, particularly
right.
for men, but to some extent for women. But when you feel intimate to your spouse, to your husband or wife, and then you have sex, that is a physiological expression that can lead to you feeling a sense of oneness.
Amazing.
And so that is the possibility of sexual intimacy, but it doesn't always bring that to happen, but that's the possibility.
So what is love to you? What is love?
It is a profound caring, affinity, understanding, mutuality, and a willingness to grow and make use of this precious life.
At some point, when you're married and you get to a certain age, should you just stop having sex?
I don't believe that.
You don't think so?
No.
Why do you need sex after a while? You had all your children, you know, you're like up in age, you're together. Why do you need sex after, I mean, it seemed boring. Why do you need it after a certain period of life?
You know, I mean, for the same reason, it's a form of connection. It's deep and beautiful, and it's one of many different kinds of connections that husbands and wives have.
Even after you've been together for a long time?
Yeah.
You still need sex?
I still enjoy and appreciate sex.
Isn't there a time when you got to cut the sex thing off? I don't mean cut it off. I mean let sex go.
When women go through menopause and when men get into their 60s and 70s, they also will lose their hormones. Women use estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone. They get vaginal dryness. They lose libido. They're not interested in being sexual. Men, 60, 70 years old, testosterone levels way down. They lose their desire. They don't want to have sex. In which case, it's fine to let it go.
Yes.
Now, my opinion is that you can replace testosterone in a man or woman and other hormones, and you feel at the age of 74 just like you did when you were 40.
Right.
In which case, you still want to have sex because the desire is there. And if you have a partner that you love and loves you and you're married, it just creates that intense intimacy. You don't feel like you're getting old. You keep that. That's what ageless love is about, is feeling that intimacy at any age. You could be 100 years old and you still love being intimate with your marriage partner.
I can see the testosterone stop and use energy to move about, work out, do your
yes.
thing. But look, like, you know, when he gets to say, he's like, you know what? That's fine. I don't need that.
You know, I have no problem whether you have sex or not. As a medical doctor, it's fine, whatever you do. However, I treat 1,000 or more people with these things, and everybody who's married and their husband and wife, and they love that sexual intimacy, they are as deeply, intensely in love when they're 60, 70, 80 years old as they were when they were 40.
Really?
Yeah.
That's amazing. Isn't that like amazing?
And their brain is younger.
Really?
And their muscles are younger. And they are enthusiastic about their life. And retirement? What is retirement? Why would I retire?
Me too. I would never retire. I can't even. It's not even in my thinking. It's not. I don't even know why people do it, but I understand a lot of people do it. What is a man?
XY chromosome.
What is a man?
Michael said it best. Well, a man is a... A man is the head of the household. A man is responsible and a leader of a family. A man is someone to respect and appreciate.
Should a man marry a woman that would not take... You took Michael's last name, right?
Yes.
Should a man marry a woman that would not take his last name?
You know, it's probably a clue that there's going to be a problem down the road.
Right. So should he marry a woman that will not take his last name?
You know, I don't make rules for other people,
would you recommend a marry a woman that would not take his last name?
I would say it might be that's a signal of trouble ahead. But I couldn't guarantee that I'm right.
Right. But you wouldn't recommend a marriage?
Yeah, I wouldn't be enthusiastic, no.
Would you recommend a man marry a woman who would not take his last name?
I think they would need to have really thoughtful discussions about it. And if the man had no objection, could be fine. If the man feels like that doesn't work for me, then they have to kind of look at that and decide what they want to do. I've never had anyone come and ask me that question.
Right. But would you recommend, if a man tell you, you know, Doc, this woman is telling me she's not going to take my last name, should I marry her?
No one's ever asked me that. If they did, I would say, as Barbara said, I would have great reservations about that. Yeah. You better ask her a lot of other questions, too.
Nice.
Such as, but here's the other questions to ask. So, are you going to have separate money? Or are you going to put all the money into one joint bank account?
Right.
Who's in charge of the bank account? How are you going to do it? Who's making the decisions? How much money are you allowed to spend without asking your partner? These are all things that you have to decide. And it will probably be a different answer if you're getting married for the first time when you're 20 years old. We were 20 and 21 when we got married.
Right.
If you're 35 years old and you've got your own bank account, you have your own house, you have your own this, these are things that the husband and wife, before they get married, have to think about.
Yeah.
What are we doing with all these finances? And you better think it out ahead of time and make sure that it makes sense to both of you, because don't get married first and then end up with all these issues that you have never talked about.
Amazing. I'm looking at the clock and I can't believe how fast time goes. So I got to move a little faster. Should a man ever tell a woman his problems?
Of course. Why not? If he feels comfortable sharing them, it would be smart if a man lets the woman know if he wants the woman.
A little alpha?
It would be smart if the man lets the woman know if he wants her to just listen, or if he wants her to help solve the problems. But mostly, I think men want their woman to listen.
Oh, should a man ever tell a woman his problems? Whether it's his wife, his mother, any woman?
Other women, not necessarily. The wife, yes, when they have set an appointment. You have to set an appointment.
Yeah.
The reason you set an appointment is you don't want to just throw problems on someone and get into an argument. Say, hey, let's have a discussion. I need to talk to you. I got to have 5 minutes uninterrupted of talking to you about my stuff. When's a good time? He said, an appointment. You don't just throw stuff out. And she's cooking and doing this and that and answering phones, and then you throw something on her, and then there's an explosion.
So we have rules about these conversations, and we teach couples how to activate these rules so that both parties, husband and wife, feel respected and heard.
Oh, okay. Should a man ever take a woman's advice? Should he ever listen to a woman?
Yes.
You say yes?
I said yes. But only when they're having a discussion where they have appointments, and then they each have their opinions about it. And so we have one exercise we do where the woman makes a request of the man that it would really make me happy if, and then the woman makes the request of her husband. And the rule is, whatever the guy says is okay. He doesn't have to say yes. He can say maybe, maybe not, whatever. It's fine. No upsets allowed. So the woman makes requests that are feminine requests of what makes her happy.
Oh.
Because she needs to get in touch with that feminine part of herself. And the man wants it to flower. He wants that to happen. So we have specific things that we talk about. You don't need the woman to ask for a request that is, hey, I want you to work more hours at work now. I want you to handle this. They don't need that. But the woman needs to know that she can make these feminine requests. Oh, I'd love to go for a walk in the park. Oh, I'd love to go on a date once a week or whatever.
All right. Should a man ever listen to a woman? I mean, should a man ever listen to a woman, take her advice and all that?
Yeah, I think a man should, I mean, there's a certain mutual respect. A man should listen to his woman. Doesn't mean he's obliged to follow what she recommends. But I think there should be respectful listening on both sides.
God said to the man, because you listen to the woman, you suffer. And I know that every time the man listens to the woman, he suffers. Was God playing around when you said that, or did he mean that?
Well, in the Adam and Eve story, he meant it.
Right. And so if God said to the man, because you listen to the woman, and every time now the man listens to the woman, he suffers, why should he take her advice or listen to her knowing he's going to suffer?
So if the woman is making a request telling a man how to deal with work, what to do or not to do at work, or so on, it's different than saying it would make me happy if we went on a date once a week. That's a different kind of request.
Oh, I see. Amazing. So listen, I got to ask you just one quick question. What's wrong with the blacks?
Blacks who don't have a father in the family are suffering greatly.
Yep.
That's the big problem.
Amen.
Big problem, and we know where it comes from.
Yeah.
It comes from the kindness of throwing money at the young women. When I was growing up in New York, all the young women, the blacks and Puerto Ricans, the girls were 12, 13, 14 years old. Oh, I'm moving out. I'm getting pregnant.
Yeah.
I'm getting this money.
Yeah.
And what? You're not getting married? No. Why would I get married? I want the money. I want my own apartment. And it's been downhill since then.
What a mess, huh?
Oh.
What a mess. What a mess. Do you believe racism exists?
Excuse me?
Racism.
What about it?
Do you believe it exists?
It exists?
Right.
I'm sure it exists.
You sure it exists?
Yeah.
Why do you say that? Do you believe it
exists? All over the world, there's racism all over the world. The United States is less racist than almost any other country.
You believe it exists?
I don't know how to answer your question, but I think it's blown up out of proportion, and I think people are judged. What did Martin Luther King say? They're judged by the quality of their character.
Right. And where is Martin Luther King now?
Oh, he's not on this plane.
I rest my case. I'm from Alabama. Grew up on a plantation. Grew up under Jim Crow laws. I was around when they started that stupid movement called the Civil Rights Movement, which is no such thing as civil rights, right?
Mm.
the word racism did not even exist. It was a made-up word in order for the civil rights leaders to control the blacks.
Interesting point of view.
We were taught, and it still is true today, our battle is a spiritual battle. It's a warfare between good and evil. It has nothing to do with color. It has nothing to do with male or female. It's either right or wrong. And we were taught to treat everybody the way we would like to be treated. And when I was growing up, blacks and whites treated each other the way that they would like to be treated. All that mess was not going on. And you can find some evil people in all races, and you can find some good people in all races. So it's a spiritual thing. It has nothing to do with racism.
I agree with
it's
you.
It's a made-up word.
I'm happy to agree with that.
Yeah, and we need to put that out there. So listen, I got to put you on the hot seat.
Okay.
And I need you to answer these questions as quickly as possible. You ready?
Yes, sir.
All right.
The hot seat.
Is our borders currently under invasion?
Yes.
And you say?
Absolutely.
Do we need more white babies?
We need all kinds of babies.
Do we need more white babies?
I guess, yeah, why not?
Do we need more white babies?
Yes.
True or false, abortion is worse than slavery?
Abortion is a big problem. I don't know, your question is hard. Slavery's bad. Abortion's bad.
True or false, abortion is worse than slavery?
Well, in the sense that you get to live when you're a slave, and when you're aborted, you don't. So I guess in that sense, yes.
Good point. Do the Jews own everything?
No.
Is America the best country on this side of heaven?
I wish. It used to be. I don't know. But we're trying.
When I become the president, I plan to get rid of all computers and bring men and women back to work and function with one another. Do you agree with that policy?
That's a tough question. I would like to have a society where we have no computers. That would be nice. I don't know how you do that and not have people starve. Starving, yeah. So if you can do it without people starving and going, you know, hungry and dying, that would be a really an interesting, a delight to have that. There were no computers when I was a kid.
Me either.
Everyone did good.
Yeah.
But I don't know that it can be
and
done.
And nobody starved.
I'm happy to have you present a practical way of getting to that, and then I'll look at it with you.
Does a chicken have lips?
No.
I wouldn't know.
No.
Is it wrong for a black man to love the Confederate flag?
Oh.
It's not wrong.
Do you believe in climate change?
No.
Have you ever told anyone how the cow ate the cabbage?
How the cow?
Ate the cabbage.
I've never told anyone.
True or false, sending your children to a public school is child abuse?
Just about, yes.
It's in California, yes.
Amazing. Did you have fun?
With you,
today?
Yes.
This was very
different.
Thank you.
Very nice.
Nice. That was fun. Thank you for taking on the hot seats. So tell the folks how to get your books, how to get to your program, whatever you want to put out there. And I want you to show them people.
So our book, Ageless Love.
That camera right there.
Ageless Love has practical prescriptions for you to grow your marriage into this ageless love experience. And you can go to our website, fallinginloveforever.com. Fallinginloveforever.com. There are all kinds of courses we have that are online. There are courses that you can take that are live online, and the other ones are on your own. You take them online. And then to see me as a medical doctor, you can go to OC Wellness, OCWellness.com, OC for Orange County, OCWellness.com. The office is next to the John Wayne Airport. But we can do it over the phone, too. I do a lot of things. So those how you get in touch with us. This was really fun.
Can I add something?
Yes.
Online, we have a parenting course. We teach parents to work together and hold their authority and raise their children, not give up their authority to schools and the government, and to be consistent in their message and keep their children accountable and raise healthy, integrated, mature children. We need that in our culture in the next generation.
Right on. And the website is what again?
OCWellness.com.
OCWellness.com for the medical and for the relationship classes. FallingInLoveForever.com.
Amazing. Thank you guys for coming in. I absolutely appreciate it.
It was a pleasure.
And thank you all for tuning in. Don't forget, you can support The Fallen State by going to thefallenstate.tv/donate. Or go into the description and go to locals.com and support us there. Like, follow, ring the bell, subscribe. Y'all know what to do, right? Subscribe, check out the merch. And if you have any other suggestions for amazing guests on the show, let us know. Whether we agree or not, we want to hear from you. We talk to everybody, all right? So thank you for tuning in. Let me hear from you. And thank you all again for coming. That was amazing.
Well, great.
Fun.
Pleasure.
Amazing.
Pleasure.